The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Well, for the most part, the rain has come and gone in southeast Texas, and it seems like the worst of it's over. The National Weather Service says the storm, which has been downgraded now to a tropical depression, will move through the northwestern region of Mississippi and then gradually dissipate over the Ohio Valley over the next couple of days. But the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, he warned yesterday that the worst of it is not yet over for southeast Texas. He said that in a press conference and warned of more rain that could be coming in the future. He told reporters yesterday that this disaster is much larger than Katrina or Sandy. And weather analysts have said the flooding continues, of course. It's not yet receded. Continues there in Houston, southwestern Louisiana, and will continue to be a tragedy of epic proportions in the days and weeks ahead. So far, I think over 48,000 homes have been destroyed, and 32,000 people have sought safety in overcrowded shelters in and around Houston. Thousands more are still stranded in their homes. On Wednesday, this was yesterday as well, Houston's police chief reported that they had received something like 60,000 or 70,000 calls for help. And authorities have confirmed that the death toll has now risen to 38, and they fear that it could go a fair bit higher. So we'll certainly keep our eyes on this story as it unfolds. I'm sure it will at least be in the headlines for many days to come, if not weeks and possibly months. But at the same time, you know how some of these horrific tragedies go. After a few days, there's something else that happens, and then those reports, you just don't see them as frequently. Well, on this program, as I mentioned yesterday, there is other news that needs to be covered. We can't just devote all of the time to this tragedy in southeast Texas, as bad as it is. I mentioned yesterday this Trumpet brief that Brad McDonald wrote on Tuesday. KT Zoo Gutenberg is back. We took the content, most of the content from that Trumpet brief, and converted it into an article at thetrumpet.com, and that was posted yesterday, and we've gotten quite a few people to read the article and to also view that short article about Carl Theodore Zu Gutenberg. Sorry, that short video that's embedded in the article, about a 90-second video that has, I think, over 12,000 views already. But as most of our listeners know, Carl Theodore Zu Gutenberg, he is a prominent German politician and commentator. And we've been following him for a decade. And the reason for this, as was brought out in that brief on Tuesday, is because your Bible prophesies of an end-time German-led European superstate headed up by a dynamic and charismatic leader, a man of mighty power, as it says in Daniel 8. Now, I think many of you are also aware of the fact that Zu Gutenberg resigned from politics in 2011 after a plagiarism scandal, and then he moved to the United States. And once he left Germany, many people in Germany assumed that his career as a politician was over. Everyone pretty much wrote him off, except for the Trumpet. I'll just give you a few examples. This is from thetrumpet.com, February 21st, 2011. And we said, don't write Gutenberg off. He's made of the right stuff for this moment in Germany's history. A few political battle scars could be just what the electorate needs to be assured of that reality. I mean, this is right after the plagiarism scandal, right after he resigned. And we said, don't write him off. Keep watching. Keep following him. And we did. And we have. Also from that year, May of 2011, we said, we have reason to repeat that which we have declared over the past 2 years. Watch Baron Gutenberg. This is one political star that is not about to disappear in a hurry. And then further on in the article, it says, current political instability just adds to the average German's desire to see a charismatic personality at the helm to create the national unity that is lacking in German federal politics at the moment. That's quite a forecast, or at least an admonition. Keep watching this man, even though he's kind of hibernating in the northeast of the United States. Later on in that year, again, these are all from 2011, November 21st, one thing is for sure, we wrote, the young Baron knows that Germany is in charge of Europe, and all he has to do is, to return to the political limelight is bide his time till the crisis engineered by German elites in Europe reaches the point that they deem the time appropriate to invite him back into a position of influence. There would be no one better suited to provide both a pan-European vision and a strong emotional connection to it. He's already proven his potential in that area. That was from late 2011. And then this last one here, this is the following year, October of 2012. And we said, gainsayers to the contrary, we have continually said, watch Gutenberg. Indications are, we may not have to wait much longer to see a triumphant return to high political office for Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg, Baron of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, that was 5 or 6 years ago when we were saying, he's coming back. You watch. And all the while, of course, and really up until the start of this year, he was hibernating. He was certainly as far away from German politics as you can be. Well, as I say, that started to change earlier this year. In January, there were, as Brad McDonald pointed out in that trumpet brief, you started to hear the rumors that he was going to make a comeback, and then we drew attention to an announcement in the spring. And again, thetrumpet.com really has been all over this story. And you see it, of course, in the German press, but that's about it. In the spring, it was announced that he would return to Germany ahead of the September 24th national election. That's coming up in just a few weeks. And we reported that he was going to be campaigning for the Christian Socialist Union, the CSU. And then, as you might have read in that trumpet brief on Tuesday, well, that campaigning for Angela Merkel, it officially kicked off just this week. And the German people couldn't be more excited. The German media is ecstatic. They're like, you read in the brief, they're asking questions. Is he back for good? What role is he going to have in a new government? Will the German people embrace him? To quote from Brad McDonald's trumpet brief from Tuesday, he said, after months of anticipation, the return of Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg to German politics officially begins today. Well, that's from the article we posted yesterday, because he was talking about his first major speech in front of a standing room only Bavarian crowd in Kulmbach, Germany. That was last night, just last night. And this speech was billed as Straight Talk with Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg, Elections in a World in Upheaval. It was an hour long speech. And as you might have read again in that trumpet brief, Brad McDonald pointed out that he was able to speak with the public relations manager leading up to that speech last night, as well as another public relations manager leading up to another appearance that he's going to be making, I think, on Sunday or Monday. We have Brad McDonald with us today in the studio to discuss some of what he wrote in that trumpet brief and more that he's uncovered since. Welcome to you, Brad.
Thanks for having me.
So to begin with, I don't want to get ahead of myself, I guess, but the Tobias Gunther, the one that that was organizing the event last night, you actually spoke with him on the phone, and then you spoke with another one that's coordinating the event on Sunday or Monday. Is it Sunday night? Or
Monday morning.
Monday morning. And you had an interesting development with the one overseeing the Monday event. But I guess since the speech that Tobias organized last evening, since it happened last night, maybe we could begin by discussing what Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg had to say last night in Bavaria.
Sure. He was speaking in the city of Kulmbach, which is actually about 15 minutes from where he lives. There's a town in Germany called Gutenberg, and Gutenberg owns the castle in that town. I've been there, actually. His castle sits on the side of the hill overlooking this little town. It's pretty neat. But so this is his local area. This is his old stomping ground as far as politics are concerned. So it made sense for him to return to Kulmbach. I think it was in the city hall or the concert hall. There was about 1,200, 1,300 people there to hear Gutenberg speak. It was a packed house, standing room only. As you mentioned, the title of his address was Straight Talk with Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg, Politics in a World of Upheaval. As I mentioned, it was very popular. When I talked to Tobias, who worked with the city of Kulmbach, he said that they've had an unprecedented amount of interest in the zu Guttenberg speech. They were even sending instructions to local residents about where to park and how to park because they were expecting so many people. He'd received calls from national media organizations all around Germany. So there was a lot of excitement. I retweeted a little video clip last night of it was a journalist from Berlin who kind of caught zu Guttenberg's entrance into the hall on camera. And it really was a rock star entrance. He was walking in, the crowds were going wild. People were patting him on his back. It took him 7 or 8 minutes just to get to the stage. People were just so excited. When he got there, he spoke for about 55 minutes. The first thing zu Guttenberg spoke about, which I thought was interesting and just really smart, is he started off by talking about the plagiarism scandal.
Right.
He even joked around a little bit. He didn't speak from behind a lectern or with notes.
Yeah.
He just walked around the stage and he said something like, it's safer for me to walk around the stage and not speak from behind a lectern. Lest you think I'm plagiarizing something or
right.
It just disarmed the crowd. He kind of addressed that issue right up front.
Yeah.
From there, he addressed the subject of his topic. He made the point that the world is in a state of disorder. He went down and just mentioned Brexit, the refugee crisis, Ukraine, the Middle East, Venezuela. He said that, these crises are going to affect the markets. They're going to affect politics. So, he really painted a pretty grim picture,
right,
in the first 4 or 5, 6 minutes of the speech. And then he spent the rest of the message talking about how Angela Merkel, the CSU, and I think, between the lines, his politics,
right,
are the solution to all of these problems that the world is facing.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, I guess, just from the paraphrase and some of the quotes we got from Edmund on that speech, he really let President Trump have it,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Quite a few and just numerous jokes,
yeah,
about how bad the situation is in America. And he did say that, well, we still have to have good relations for, down the road. But there's no question that he and we've noted this before. I guess it's no big surprise, but he is not a fan of Donald Trump.
No, and I think it just shows what resonates in Germany right now,
yeah,
anti-Trump and even to a certain extent anti-American sentiment resonates. You're right. He talked about how Germany needs to position itself for post-Trump America.
Right.
And there was just lots of humor in there. I think he made a remark about how even his daughter, told him that Donald Trump wasn't the brightest candle on the cake. And he just he had the crowds laughing along with him at America and at Donald Trump.
Yeah, which is a little surprising. I mean, given the fact that he's been living there, I guess. I know from what we've reported before. Again, as I say, he's no fan, but it did sound like he was coming at it from almost like MSNBC or
right,
CNN. I mean, talking about how he's not smart and just all kinds of things like that. But also, what was noted in this report on the speech, quite a few you know, emotional moments as well, like when he talked about, you know, just it's time to move on from the plagiarism scandal. And according to Joshua, who gave us the translation, there was an extended applause. And I mean, the people are behind him, like, let's move on and forget about what's in the past. And that really goes back to those many quotes. I think every one of them was by the late Ron Fraser at thetrumpet.com, where he was talking about, hey, he'll bounce back from this. Right. It may be that this is just what he needs, a little bit of a political scar to give him some momentum. And then, like you say, I think that's a good point. He comes out and that's where he starts. He right. disarms the crowd with the fact that, okay, it happened. It's in the past. Now let's move on. And yep. then people just erupted in cheering.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, he really has. I think that whole scandal has worked to his advantage. First of all, he's been in America and away from European and German politics. European politics the past 6 or 7 years has been, you know, a World War II battle scene with leaders going at each other. It's a horrible. It's a dangerous place to be if you're a politician. He's been in America. He's been out of all of that. And then also, and he really is selling this. You know, he's learned, or at least what he is saying is he's learned humility. You know, he's learned repentance. When he talks about the plagiarism, he's very honest in terms of saying, well, I was too cocky. I was too arrogant. So now he's coming back and you know, he looks humble. He looks repentant. You know, it looks like he's really developed that part of his character. And then just, you know, human nature is so fickle and the media is fickle. That happened six years ago. It's over. You know, the media is so excited about this now. No one's going to hold this against him.
Right. Well, you bring that out in the trumpet brief and then the article we posted yesterday, just the excitement level.
Yeah.
And this next engagement he has Monday morning. Now, this is following, I guess, what will be a debate between Merkel and Scholz. So that happens.
Right.
That happens live, I guess.
Sunday night, Angela Merkel and
Martin Schulz.
Martin Schulz will have a debate on national television.
Right, and then so he's on the following morning.
Yeah, I think it's he's on right after that
okay.
show. He goes on I forget the name of that show too, but he goes on that show, which is they're going to dissect that speech.
Right.
So millions of, this is the, as I understand it, this is the only debate between Merkel and Schulz. So, you know, we have 80 million Germans. I'm not sure how many will watch it, but it's the only debate between Merkel and Schulz. And then that's the lead in to this television show. And he's going to be the guest on this show and he's going to, you know, commentate on the debate. So phenomenal opportunity for him to go on television, catch such a massive audience. And in some ways, you know, his word will be the final word. He'll be the authority. You know, he'll have the opportunity to kind of shape the German public following that debate and what they should take away. So just really interesting and a great opportunity for him for sure.
Right. And so who was it you talked to ahead of writing the brief, you know, ahead of this event?
Her name was Carolyn, and I forget her surname. Well, I don't forget it. I just can't pronounce it.
Volgemuth.
Yeah.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah. So she works for the city of Abensburg.
Okay.
Abensburg is a city in Bavaria that hosts the Gillemoos Festival every year.
Okay.
This is one of the most popular summer festivals in Germany. And they have a tent because it always falls, you know, ahead of elections.
Right.
So they have a tent where politicians come and they speak. So I spoke with her and she had some fantastic quotes. You know, she's responsible for the public relations for this festival. She told me that you know, she couldn't remember a speaker garnering as much interest
right.
as Carl Theodor's speech on Monday at 10 o'clock.
And then Tobias said the same thing basically about the Thursday, night's event, Wednesday night. So
yeah.
just to clarify, that event was last night.
Right.
The Sunday show, that's a television show, a national audience
yep.
all over Germany.
Yep.
And then you have this this Monday morning speech
yep.
Where he's the keynote speaker. And you talked to Carolyn, and then she said, I've never seen this level of interest
right.
in a speaker.
Right. And then she was the one, I said, well, you know, is there anyone else I could talk to, you know, find a little bit of research? And she said, well, actually, there's Martin Neumeier. the local Christian Socialist Union politician. He's the district council for that district in Bavaria. So she gave me his number, and I didn't have time to call. I called him on Tuesday. He's so busy getting ready for Zu Gutenberg's visit on Monday. He said call back on Wednesday. So I called him back, and we had a short interview.
Okay. And then how did it work out where you just said you're interested and maybe would like to write an article, and could we record the conversation?
Right. I called him up and said, first of all, I asked him if we could, get the conversation on record. And then I just said, we're an English language media group, thetrumpet.com. We're following the German election. And in particular, we have a keen interest in Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg. He kind of chuckled as if, well, you're not alone.
Right.
and he said, yeah, I'll talk to you. And then we arranged to speak on Wednesday. And we recorded the interview on Wednesday.
Okay. And how long did you talk?
About 25 minutes.
And you wanted to set up a few clips. I guess Sam arranged for a few clips from the conversation.
Sure. Yeah, we do have some clips from that conversation. Do you want me to go ahead and we can play some of those?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I guess I can just give the audience a sense for what we talked about. I mean, first of all, I just talked about from his vantage point how well liked is Zu Gutenberg in Bavaria,
right?
And in Germany as a whole. And he just made quite a few interesting remarks. He talked about how Zu Gutenberg is an excellent speaker, an excellent politician. He said that Zu Gutenberg is handsome. He's young. I mean, all of these things that we were saying from a distance. We don't know Zu Gutenberg personally, and we don't know anyone that knows Zu Gutenberg. So we were reading between the lines and reading all of these stories written by other journalists, and then also looking at Daniel 8 and some of the scriptures that talk about the personality of this individual. But it was just great talking to this man who knows him, who's met him, who will spend most of the day Monday with Zu Gutenberg. And he starts using these terms that we've been using for 8 or 9 years.
Right.
It was really fantastic. One interesting, when he answered this question, something interesting he said was that the German people have kind of had Zu Gutenberg in the back of their minds ever since 2011. He's never really left their memory.
Right.
He's kind of tucked away back there, and it's almost as if they're waiting for his return, waiting for this moment when he steps back into the political spotlight. Maybe we could just go ahead and play clip one, Sam.
I think the people want to have such a personality like Mr. Gutenberg. He's a good speaker. He's a very politician man. He looks handsome and he is still young. And I think the people want to have such a man, such a politician out of this normal way. And his way to speak with the people is very popular. And he speak in this, he have so great, task as a minister. He was the minister of the defense and the minister of economy, I think so. And his work, the people have always in the brain and said, "Okay, it's real good. We want to have him back."
We want to have him back. It's fun. You brought out the point about just knowing. or hearing it firsthand from someone who knows him, it is astounding to me that that Ron Fraser, tucked away in his nice little office in Edmond, Oklahoma at
right.
the time, is writing about some of these very same things, as you say, that that we just heard there in that first clip.
Right. In the second clip that we're about to play here in a second, Martin talks about Horst Seehofer. Horst Seehofer is the leader of the Christian Social Union.
We might have said Socialist Union earlier. Sorry for that. That was incorrect. Christian Social Union. There you go. Keeping up with German political parties.
Right. We can thank Sam for that correction. I don't know what we'd do without him. But Horst Seehofer talked about Zu Gutenberg being he talked about how the fact that Germans see him as a messiah. And Martin, in this clip that we're about to play, actually uses that term. He's returning to Germany like a messiah. Let's play that, Sam. Clip number two.
And now, Mr. Seehofer, our minister president, want to have him back.
Yeah.
Mr. Seehofer knows that the people love him.
Yeah.
And the people are saying like a messiah, like a man who can give us a new direction for the politics. I think Mrs. Merkel is a very good chancellor, but she's 64 might be, and the people say what can we get in the future? And
yeah.
And Mr. Gutenberg, I think it's a talent. It's a man who the people want to have.
So he's in Germany campaigning for Merkel, and that's pretty revealing.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's pretty clear the CSU is looking at him as the future.
Yeah, I think that was one of the. It's probably not the most remarkable thing he said, but you know, he said Angela Merkel is a good chancellor. You've got to say that about your party leader. But then he said, well, she's 64 years old, and the German people are thinking about who comes after.
Right.
Angela Merkel. And this is a theme that came through in the speech last night that came through in this interview. You know, this is not in a lot of ways, it's not about the election in a few weeks. It's about what comes after the election. And as Martin hinted at here, you know, the German people are starting to wonder, and Angela Merkel herself is probably starting to think about who's going to replace me. I mean, I'm sure that will be one of the more important questions or subjects she thinks about as she goes into a fourth term is who's my successor? In another clip that we can play in a minute, Martin makes the point that it's very easy to see Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg moving to Berlin after the election to take up a post in Angela Merkel's government,
wow.
A cabinet post.
Yeah. With that, we will take a short break and then return in the next segment with our special guest in the studio today, Brad McDonald, who earlier this week wrote, Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg is back. That was in the Trumpet Brief on Tuesday. And then it was posted as the featured article at thetrumpet.com on Wednesday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If we have time later in the program, we might get to a couple of emails as well. If you'd like to email the program, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong described Germany's devastating destruction in 1944 and 1945 as one of the worst beatings ever administered to any nation. Western leaders from both sides of the Atlantic assured our peoples that a demoralized Germany would never again be able to disturb the peace of the world. But while Washington and London were promising that German militarism would never again be able to strike, Herbert Armstrong was warning the world of one final resurrection of a German-led Holy Roman Empire. Only a very few listened. Mr. Armstrong said German industry and the German people's willpower and determination to work, produce, and organize was the very heart and lifeblood of all Europe.
The nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it.
He said the prostrate body of Europe could not come back without the leadership of a revived and vigorous Germany.
And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The world is witnessing history repeat itself one more time. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire for more on this important subject. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
So how much interest has there been in Gutenberg's appearance on Monday?
From the press and
yeah.
from the journalists, so much.
From
never,
the press
never,
and the public.
Yeah, yeah. Never, never, ever in this way. Never, ever.
Oh, there's never been this much interest?
No. Yes, indeed.
That's a sampling of the interview that Brad McDonald had yesterday with Martin Neumeier. He is a member of the Christian Social Union Party. He's been in politics for 45 years. As we discussed in the first segment, he has known Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg for some time now. He knows Horst Seehofer, and he's confirming what we've written at thetrumpet.com even many years ago, when it seemed as if zu Guttenberg was banished. He was moved out, or he left Germany to the United States. That happened in 2011, and now we see him making his comeback. And as you just heard there in that exchange, there's people in Germany that just haven't seen anything like this in some time in German politics. We're here today with Brad McDonald, who conducted that interview with Mr. Neumeier yesterday, and who wrote the Trumpet brief on Tuesday. That material that then went up on the Trumpet website yesterday as well. You want to set up then the next couple of clips that you have from your interview yesterday?
Sure. I also asked Martin Neumeier just, you know, what's different about zu Guttenberg's politics, his ideologies. Does he see politics, you know, differently than other German politicians? And he made his response to this question was really interesting. He mentioned, or he stated, that zu Guttenberg is both liberal and conservative, and that this is the kind of politician that the German people want right now. You know, post-war Germany prides itself on being multicultural and tolerant and, you know, supportive of all kinds of different people. But at the same time, we have a huge number of people, especially since 2015, a huge number of Germans and a growing number of Germans who are really concerned about the inflow of migrants from the south. And, you know, they're really concerned that Germany's Christian heritage is being watered down and destroyed. And they're really concerned about the impact that the migrants are having on the economy. So the German person these days is conflicted. He wants to be multicultural and tolerant and sophisticated and the post-war German that he's enjoyed being. But at the same time, you know, his empirical self, or he as a native German, he's concerned about the impact the migrants are having on his country. So the modern German is both liberal and conservative, or is pulled in both directions. And in this clip that we're about to listen to, this politician says that zu Guttenberg politically is both conservative and liberal. That's clip three, Sam.
So what about his politics? What about his ideologies? Is there anything different about the way he sees politics and the way he sees issues?
I think it's both. He's liberal and he's conservative. And this both line are good for the people in the future. They need the liberal part of a politician, but the conservative part is also important for the people, because they have a sensible meaning about the situation. So many refugees are coming, asylum seekers are coming, and the society is changing.
Yeah.
And not all the people want to have this. And maybe he gives the fundament. He gives our fundament to have liberal, open German, a liberal German, a country with open the borders, and say, okay, we need people because we have not so much sons and daughters from the parents. But we also want to have our own identity. We don't want to give all away and say, okay, let's do it. But the people want to have both. They want to have the open Germany, the successful, economical, successful Germany, political, successful. Momently, Germany is in a way it's nobody have seen it in the future, in the past, seen that the German chancellor is momently the leader of the free world. It's more than Macron, more than Mrs. May, more than maybe Trump. Trump is more mighty, but he not in the sign for the in the sense from the people, and therefore the people want to have both liberal side and the conservative side, and this may be this hope maybe give Mr. Carty.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Even with his speech last night, I thought it was interesting the way he talked about the refugee crisis and said that, you know, something needs to change. This, we can't sustain this. We can't go back to 2015. And then at the same time, he talked about how compassionate the German people have been to help them when they have showed up. And then he said, if there is one good thing to come out from this crisis, it's that people in, you know, these people in war-torn regions like Syria or in Northern Africa, they love Germany. I mean, this is like escalating Germany's popularity on the world stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I read an article yesterday where a Syrian migrant who now lives in Germany, they just had their fifth child and they named it Angela after Angela Merkel. So you're right. Just a couple of quotes from last night's speech in Kulmbach, zu Gutenberg. This is right at the end of the speech. Great conclusion, appearing to the patriotic spirit of his audience. You know, he says, we need to have a debate about the guiding culture in this country. Just further down, everyone who comes here needs to take it personally to accept our culture, our laws, our language. That should be obvious. So, you know, this is something that I think, I mean, I'd like to dig into it a little bit more. Just his ability to appeal to the patriotic German,
right,
but at the same time to appeal to the, you know, the sophisticated German or the German who doesn't, I mean, most Germans don't want to support the AfD. They're not running, they don't want that. That's too obvious. It's too obviously bad to support the Nazi Party. So they want someone to address these issues, but they want it to be addressed in a way to where they still feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the way he comes at these issues.
Yeah, I thought it was really, and that was a crafty politician on display.
That was a Daniel 8, 23 or 25 politician, for right. sure.
The next clip you're going to set up here, clip 4.
Right, this is just a short one. I ask Martin Neumeyer, you know, if he could speculate a little bit about zu Gutenberg's future after the upcoming election on September 24th. And he was a little bit coy and shy to do this, but he did it a little bit. But he, in this next clip, he talks about how he could very easily see zu Gutenberg receiving a cabinet post in Merkel's next administration. That's clip number 4, Sam.
Does he stand a chance at being chancellor again?
It's too speculative, maybe. I think in the cabinet, if Mr. Seehofer wants this and Mr. Kauti to Gutenberg say yes, it's possible. It's really possible. It's no problem. But a chancellor is another way. But we don't know what brings us the future. What get we?
Right.
You mentioned earlier the Daniel 8 prophecy. Maybe you could just summarize what it is we're actually looking for, and what Ron Fraser and my father and you've written about it a fair bit too. There's some descriptive verses there about this this mighty man, or this strong man, as my father's called him. That we're to be watching for.
Sure. It's a really interesting study if our viewers wanted to see this for themselves. If you dig out the Hebrew, you look into the Hebrew meaning of some of the terms. Well, first of all, the Daniel 8 man in the end time is compared to Antiochus Epiphanes. He was the – it's really testing my knowledge of history here.
You can just briefly summarize.
He was the Greek leader, I think, in the 2nd or 3rd century B.C., who caused a lot of destruction. So he's being compared to Antiochus Epiphanes. And then if you look up some of the meaning of the words, it talks about he understands dark sentences. He speaks smooth things. And if we look up the Hebrew meanings of those words, you know, it tells us that he's very eloquent. He understands politics. He's crafty. He's cunning. There's also a lot of historical information about Antiochus Epiphanes, and that can inform our understanding of this Daniel 8 man. One final thing about the Daniel 8 man is it also says explicitly in Daniel 8 that he won't come to power through the democratic process,
right?
Which is really important and really significant, and I think just incredible. That the Bible could be so specific about how this man 2,400 years in the future right. would come to power. It wouldn't be through the democratic process. And that's exactly what Martin was just talking about. You know,
right.
he was just saying Angela Merkel is probably going to be reelected. After her reelection, she's going to have to form a cabinet. And if Zu Gutenberg will accept it, he's all, you know, they're going to offer him a post.
Right.
Seehofer has been wanting Zu Gutenberg to have a post in the German government for months and months and months. I also asked Martin, well, what cabinet post would he be best suited for? And he said foreign minister, no doubt about it. So now if you're a cabinet, if you're in a cabinet position in the Merkel government, you're one step away from being chancellor. And as I understand it, the way it works in Germany is if Angela Merkel resigns, if she has a health problem, you know, if something happens, the German people don't elect another individual. The party comes together and they decide who will replace her.
Mm-hmm. And so, just to look at some of these verses you paraphrased, I have my Bible open to it. He comes in peaceably and obtains the kingdom by flatteries. That's Daniel 11, 21. And then the details that are brought out in Daniel 8, which is the prophecy we often refer to, it refers to one that, where is it? The policy also that he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and he comes in the name of peace, and so on. So obviously we have lots of literature that you can look at to study this further. You can do a search on the trumpet.com if you like. You said, I think you had one more clip you wanted to touch on?
Sure. I think it's just, well, we went through clip 7, didn't we? I think that might actually be it for the clips.
Okay. Well, just to summarize, the Trumpet Brief talked about this week, this blast of Zu Gutenberg with
yep.
all of these appearances.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea about what he's going to be doing after that week, like all the way up to the elections on September 24th?
The same. He's going to be campaigning for the Christian Social Union and campaigning for Angela Merkel. Zu Gutenberg is going to be front page news between now and the election. I read today, funnily enough, and I mean this is what you would expect the Daniel 8 and Daniel 11 man to do. I read today that he's going to watch the election from his home in America. So he's going to leave the chaos and he's going to watch the election from America. We'll see what happens there. Another remark I read today that was really interesting. This German media source interviewed someone who attended last night's speech in Kulmbach. I didn't write it down, but this person said the way he spoke reminded me of Franz Josef Strauss.
Right. Yeah.
Just a blockbuster. The person was 75 years old.
Yeah.
And he said, Zu Gutenberg reminded me of Franz Josef Strauss. Now, you know, a lot of our listeners, they'll be a little bit moved by that, because this is something that Mr. Gerald Flurry, the Trumpet's editor-in-chief, he's been talking about Franz Josef Strauss and Franz Josef Strauss' legacy, you know, in Germany and the impact he's had on Germany and how the Daniel 8 man will come in the same spirit of Franz Josef Strauss. So when I read that today, just from a regular German citizen who went to this speech last night and he said it reminded me of Strauss,
mm-hmm.
I just thought, boy, we it's amazing.
We've been right on it.
We've been right on it. Thanks to Bible prophecy and just this truth being revealed.
We're talking today about the comeback of Carl Theodor Zu Gutenberg, Brad McDonald's Trumpet Brief from earlier in the week, and then some really riveting details that he's dug up here following that Trumpet Brief with some phone conversations, specifically with Martin Neumeier, the member of the Christian Social Union, the Bavarian Party, and the one that coordinates or is coordinating this event, I believe, on Monday. And we'll certainly be following the movements of Zu Gutenberg over the next week and leading all the way through to the German elections on September 24th. My thanks to Brad McDonald for joining me today in the studio for this discussion. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program by going through a few listener and reader emails that we've gotten over the last few days. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
All right, I think I can squeeze in one additional news item before we conclude today's show with a few emails that have come in. This is from Rod Little at The Spectator. The Royals are done for, he says, and it's all thanks to Diana. We're at the 20th year anniversary of her car crash back in August 1997. And Little says here, it is 20 years since the Princess of Wales was killed horribly in a car crash in Paris. And so we're seeing a reprise of the same bizarre weeping and wailing, conspicuous emoting, and largely confected grief from certain sections of the public and the media that accompanied her untimely passing and so astonished me in its weird hysteria, its mawkishness on the day of her funeral. On the 6th of September, 1997, he says, I thought then, this is in 1997, I thought then that I had woken up in a different country. I mean, just seeing the way Great Britain reacted to that that death. And he goes on to say later, she spilled, talking about her life as a royal, she spilled her guts out and complained on TV about stuff, about her travails, and how terribly badly she had been treated. But the signs were there long before her TV interview with Martin Bashir. The leaks from her office, the continual reports of a rift within the family, criticism of the stuffiness of the senior royals, and the staged photographs sitting alone looking a bit mopey by the Taj Mahal. All about me. The idea that she might subordinate her feelings for the good of some higher purpose did not sit easily with Diana, because according to this new mantra, there is no higher purpose than simply what one feels. Unfair though this might seem, it is likely that Diana has brought the royal family close to an end in a meaningful sense in three ways: her behavior, her genes, and her death. It is likely that Diana has brought the royal family close to an end. I wish I brought the most recent Trumpet cover down here with me, my father's article about the demise of the royal family. A picture of Queen Elizabeth II there on the cover. Go and read that. I mentioned the August issue as well, the one where my father wrote about the Paris Climate Accords and what he said about climate change. And you look at what's in the news. It says, finally here in this Spectator piece, when Prince Philip announced his retirement earlier this year, one could sense the baton being handed over to a very different set of creatures. creatures who will not be rude to foreigners but might well cry on television. It is difficult to see what exactly is royal about Princes William and Harry, except for their blood and their titles, and nobody thinks any of that matters anymore, do they? Well, Prince Harry himself told Newsweek over the summer that he didn't know if anyone in the royal family even wanted to rule on that throne. That was just from a month or two ago. Well, that's a piece from The Spectator by Rod Little. We'll conclude today with a couple of emails, I think three that I have here that came in response to various messages or programs that we've sent out. This first one here: I'm grateful to be able to have access to your historical knowledge and insights as to how what happened in the past applies to the here and now. I'm grateful, too, for your biblical knowledge and insights. This is a really interesting email that we received yesterday. He says, I am a high church Anglican, so I believe in the Holy Trinity as described by the early church fathers in the Roman Catholic Church. Yes, indeed, in the Roman Catholic Church. But alas, I must confess, my church is failing those she is supposed to be shepherding by not addressing these vital issues taking place in our society today. We even have bishops now who are shacked up with their same-sex sex partners. St. Paul told the bishops to have only one wife as opposed to two or three or four. At no time did he say that the bishop could have a male partner to replace a female wife. I pray for the church. I also tell her what I think in no uncertain terms. In the meantime, God bless you good people. St. Paul also said, let every man and woman work out their own salvation with fear and trembling. My fear of God, however, is one of total awe. Only he can rescue this troubled world and bring his kingdom here. That comes from a listener who obviously is a member of the High Church Anglican, she says, the Roman Catholic Church. And yet she follows this work. She receives our trumpet briefs and sent in a nice response there. Another one here says, I especially enjoyed today's program and wished it would go on. Thankfully, with modern technology, we can have an all-day spiritual feast. Along with that technology is the vulnerability of being rich and increased with goods, which people in Houston aren't experiencing much of right now. At the start of the show today, with the gender issue, I was thinking about Satan being cast down and was happy when you finally focused on his diabolical involvement. The populace just ignores God and talks about climate change, which reminded me of Jeremiah 10. Who would not fear you, O King of Nations? For to you does it appertain, for as much as among all the wise men of the nations and all their kingdoms, there is none like unto you. He writes, a past Key of David program on Christmas covers that subject matter in great detail. Those who remain unaffected can close their minds to God, but as you mentioned, the people in the floodwaters are crying out to God. They aren't talking about climate change as they climb in boats and abandon everything they've known for years. It says here, I'm going to take a slight liberty to say there is climate change, morally and spiritually. Revelation 12, and he quotes that, woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea. Satan's deceived the whole world, that passage there. He says, as I listen to each new Key of David and powerful and stunning truth, it seems to come more and more alive, it says, or that truth from Revelation 12 comes more alive. Mr. Fleury is focusing on issues like actually believing God at his word when he says things, actually believing and accepting Revelation 12:9 as it is. Don't ignore it. Well, this last email here comes in from New Zealand, and it says, I've been avidly watching and listening through your trumpet briefs, website articles, and your radio show, along with reports here in New Zealand. The news, though, is pretty basic here, just another news item to be churned out in the midst of national trivia. So I'm relying on you to receive the truth. It's such an awful tragedy. And then to read about the looters, holding up and stealing people's boats for their own dastardly deeds, and some of the media reports regarding Mr. Trump and his wife, even the outfits that they wore to Houston, such evil, demeaning, spiteful, and hate-filled disrespect to him and his wife. It is truly harrowing to reading some of the reports and the utter devastation inflicted upon Houston. The book or booklet, Why Natural Disasters, is such an impact truth, truth-filled little book that explains so simply why God, out of love and mercy, has allowed this. I just see it as a wake-up call to everyone, every one of us, to turn from our sins and to turn to God while there is still time. It's given me another jolt to examine myself and take serious action where needed. We just finished, I finished the notes for a TV program that we're going to be recording this afternoon, where we advertise Why Natural Disasters. So we're excited to put together a timely program that will hopefully be put to air next weekend, not this weekend, but next. To conclude with the end of this email from New Zealand, she says, I cannot see how America financially is going to be able to weather this one. And they are talking years for the town and cities to be rebuilt. When all that water has subsided, it will be a stinking, rotten quagmire. And the health issue that could come forth could inflict even more suffering, discomfort, and even death. All that suffering because we've forgotten God. And as it is so often, we tend to only cry out to God when the chips are down. It says, finally, many thanks to you and the team for these inspiring, truth-filled radio shows, briefs, and articles. I do deeply appreciate and rely on this marvelous, wondrous, end-time work that you're all doing and bringing to us. Keep safe. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.